seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
Andrew, welcome along to Golf Weekly. We're very excited to be here. It's Joe Molloy here. Nathan Murphy alongside me. Hello.
Good afternoon.
And we're not in Peter Lawrie's house this time around. He is here in 3D for us anyway. Hello, Peter Lawrie.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
From the Peter Lawrie Academy.
you'll know it as you come off the M50 by the giant statue of Peter Lawrie at the Temple Owe roundabout.
I wish, lads. I wish.
What did you do it?
We're going to have a new venue now with the Dublin GAA coming in and closing me down.
Can they turn you out? Mm.
Eventually they will, yeah.
Okay,
but they'll decide what they're going to do. No.
So where are you going to go?
Don't know. I'm looking for land.
Oof.
I want to build a Top Golf in Ireland.
What's a Top Golf?
Top Golf is you see it in America where you go and you have like, you not only do you have your bay, you have a little booth. And they serve alcohol, they serve food, they have music.
I'll be honest.
Yeah.
I hate that.
I know, because you're a golf perv. But a lot of people who don't like maybe golf.
Was that the absolute, was the only word you could have went
for? I think it's the best one to go with.
Absolutely.
I think it's the one we should go with in the future.
Yeah. You're a golf perv.
Yes, there you go.
Okay. As are all the listeners, really.
No, they're not. They're actually proper golfers out there.
What?
And they all love the pod, by the way.
This is worse than...
They all really love the pod.
This is worse than that time John Hartson said you weren't a football man.
Sorry, explain to me here what you're saying about me. How am I different to the listeners?
Because you just are. You want a lesson over the radio.
Oof. I guarantee you, lots of people listening are obsessed with their golf. Can I tell you, Peter?
Go on.
After 8 years of hacking around this bloody game,
yeah,
I've crossed the threshold into single-figure golf.
I know, so I heard.
Yeah. The last thing I want to do when I want to go and practice my golf...
Right.
...is to stand beside a bunch of people who don't love the game,
yeah,
who are there to drink, who want to play music. I'm sorry. I won't be going there, Peter.
Okay,
but I think you got to realise, Peter, this is Joe Molloy.
Absolutely.
A lot of people like to enjoy their lives.
You're correct.
And, you know...
And have a bit of
relax.
Crack. Yeah.
Have fun.
Yes. Just, can he spell fun?
Oof. Wow, you're getting a battering.
No, because I actually decided this year, right? I've actually decided to kick back. Because Joe slagged me so much recently about my ability to coach the game of golf. Wow. And I just think it's time. I'm going to do a Boris Johnson on it. I'm actually going to come back, you know, completely in the wrong and just decide, feck it, I'm going to go.
So what are you doing?
I'm hitting back.
He's admitted he's completely in the wrong here and he's been incredibly harsh on me, which I appreciate.
Do you know what you need to do, Peter?
What?
For your next venture, you need some innovation. And do you know who are... leading the field in innovation right now, Joe.
Go on.
My good friends.
Oh, here we go.
My good friends in Ballyhonus Golf Club.
Wow.
This is actually disgusting what's happening here.
This is me doing good for the golfing community in rural Ireland, which has been destroyed by successive governments in this country.
Why did you leave if you care so much? Why did you leave?
Because I would have loved to have stayed, but there just wasn't the opportunities. How many off the balls are there down in Mayo? Like, we could bring it down there for the amount of mail we do, but all I'm saying, Ballyhonus, have you ever played Ballyhonus?
No.
Beautiful nine-hole golf course. Some say the best nine-hole golf course in Ireland.
Wow.
I haven't heard that, but
I'm not sure how many nine-hole golf courses are in Ireland.
So
it is a
Sutton's very nice.
Very nice.
Yeah, Sutton's quite
nine-hole
nice. Golf
course. Sheep on the golf course?
Rarely. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever seen a sheep on the golf course.
Get on with it here, will you?
Anyways, so Joe, on Saturday 19th of October, mm-hmm. they're running a special event. It's called the Challenge Tour. And what they're doing is, they have three different challenges on the day. A long drive challenge, a long putt challenge, and a hole-in-one challenge. So you come along, you don't play your 9 holes or your 18 holes. You take part in the challenges. You pay to enter the three challenges, or each challenge. Mm-hmm. Prizes in excess of €35,000. Mm-hmm. The main prize being a brand new Seat Ateca, Joe, if you get a hole-in-one.
Ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling. Very amateur good. Status.
They're going to have TrackMan fitting tent, which I know you're a big fan.
That's very good.
And he's getting, you see, if you're in Spawell in Dublin, you can go there and everybody has TrackMan.
Yeah.
Down the country, they don't get to see TrackMan quite as good often.
Well, they can
so
come up.
They can go, well, no, they can just go to Ballyhonus.
When they're coming up to the, you know, the GAA matches and stuff.
See, they're going to have celebrities there on the day from the GAA world, the golf world. Have you got a call?
Not yet.
And myself, Joe. I am also going to be there on the day. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just going to hit a few balls and hope for the best. But it does mean if you're down around the country and you're at the Spawell Golf Academy and you can smash the ball 300 yards mm-hmm. and you're not much good at anything else, here's an opportunity for you to win some serious cash. Check out Ballyhaunice Golf Club's Facebook page.
And there you have it, folks. What you've just heard there is somebody securing themselves lifetime membership of a golf course. Disgusting. I apologise for what's
I'm giving
happened.
Back.
You know what? Radio should have a face back. Here because your face, Joe, is just...
We are live. Literally live right now online.
I'm actually sickened by both of you after the opening exchanges of this podcast.
Shall we go?
You know when we were just going on air and Joel said, Peter, we're live. We're live. Do you know why he kept repeating it? Because we're actually live, which means everything you say right now... See that camera? Yeah. People are watching it right now.
Hello, everybody. Can't be retracted.
So, just all those things you're thinking about saying about certain people.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Don't say them.
Right.
Can I thank the show sponsors? Do you mind if I do that?
Also great guys.
La Cala in Spain, the largest golf resort in Spain, Irish-owned, FBD Hotels and Resorts. They have 3 18-hole golf courses out there, located near Mijas, of course. State-of-the-art spa, 107-bedroom hotel, UEFA standard pitches, and they are very generous sponsors to us. And they're giving away a brilliant prize. Lots of you entered last week. You can enter again this week. You can enter once each week, and then we're going to pick a name at random. So obviously, the more times you enter, the more you increase your chances. So this is your second chance to enter our fantastic competition, with thanks to La Cala Resort, where you can win 3-night stay, 4-2, flights included, Peter.
Wow.
2 rounds of golf on your choice from their 3 brilliant golf courses at La Cala Resort in Mijas, southern Spain, in 2020. You just have to answer the following question, either through the Golf Weekly Twitter account, at Golf Weekly OTB, or the Off The Ball Twitter accounts. They'll be pinned, those tweets, all week, especially on the Golf Weekly account. The question is, the Ryder Cup is exactly 365 days away. We've taken into account the leap year. We're on the ball here, Peter.
Absolutely.
At which famous Wisconsin course will next year's Ryder Cup be taking place? So all you have to do is answer that on Twitter and include hashtag LaCala2020, hashtag LaCala2020, which your answer. One more chance to enter next week, Wednesday the 2nd of October, through both Golf Weekly and Off The Ball Twitter accounts. And then the winner will be announced Thursday the 3rd. Good luck to all who enter.
I often wondered what our podcast would sound like if we hit the jackpot, Joe, and we got brought over to America to cover the PGA Tour. Uh-huh. And I think that last 10 minutes is exactly it. It would just be one giant infomercial mm-hmm. for the first 10 minutes.
Well, I mean, they got a good 4 or 5 minutes of Peter rinsing me, I thought.
Oh, that was bonus.
Where are you, by the way? No, seriously, on the whole, that style of driving range, which is very popular in America. So I see why you're thinking about it. And I get the vibe. Like, I could see how a stag party would love it. I could see how casual golf fans would love it. Have a few beers. Maybe they don't want to sit around a pub all day. Obviously, when I go to the range, I'm practicing. So I wouldn't be your target market as such. And I would find the stag party next bay to me irritating is my point. But you obviously feel there's enough people. Where is Nathan Murphy in this venture?
I think in Ireland you would need a mix. I think one of the differences in America is that they have a slightly more relaxed attitude towards drink driving, for starters.
And
which
drinking
means,
and golfing, actually.
Exactly. Yeah. So people associate golfing with having a drink, that they're very much off, relaxing, chilled out. Whereas in Ireland, people go to the range, not for the crack. In fact, they don't want to talk to anyone when they're there a lot of the time.
They're golf pervs.
And I love them all.
Yeah. Peter Lawrie calls his customers golf pervs. Yeah. That's the headline of this.
Yeah, but that's okay.
I definitely think it's an option. But I wouldn't say you could. I'd say you'd need to have half it fun and games. Maybe a Joe Malloy booth somewhere soundproofed so he doesn't have to talk to anybody.
You'd have to have a golfer's side to it.
Have you seen it anywhere outside of America?
They have something similar to it in South Africa, and it's done exceptionally well, where you go in, you hit as many balls as you like. So this is really suit you, Joe. Mm-hmm. They have short game facilities, bunkers, world of bunkers, world of putting, world of chipping. And then they have certain areas for people who are really, really serious about the game.
Golf pervs. Yeah. And you could call that area golf pervs.
You should, yeah. People would love walking in there.
Big ads everywhere.
Interestingly, what would happen if you happened to go and play in the fun section?
Yeah.
I mean,
where all the cool kids are.
Self-proclaimed. What happens if you discover, Jesus, I'm a much better golfer with a pint and a half on me?
Many people have done.
I would have thought so.
Yeah.
Well, isn't this what Porter Carrington says? The worst thing that can happen to a young golfer is he goes out the night before on the lash and he goes and he shoots 62 because he thinks, I can do this all the time.
But I can see how you eliminate a bit of tension. You get a bit more flow to your swing. It's just, whoosh, you're not as worried about consequences. Well,
I could name probably three, maybe four players on tour currently who would be better with a recovering from maybe the night before and play much better than they would if they turned up and, you know, sober.
Interesting. Yeah.
Live.
Again, we're live, so.
I know. So, did you like the way I did that?
Yeah.
We were both surprised and we liked it.
So what you've done there is you could name them.
Yes.
So you have the knowledge,
yes.
But you're choosing not to.
Exactly.
That's fine.
Under instruction.
Good for you, Peter.
Thanks.
We appreciate that. And strictly, is it against the laws or do they ever send out any dispatches? Say you're somebody that realises this and you've got a little hip flask and you think, do you know what? A unit of alcohol across each nine holes suits me just dandy. Has that been known to happen?
I couldn't really tell you that one. I don't know, to be totally honest.
I wouldn't think so, personally.
No, probably not now.
Because these people have grown up playing brilliant golf as kids, I would think, sober. So they're used to playing
absolutely
fully sober.
Yeah.
Unless you had a drink problem.
But there is no law against it. As in, it's not a, it's not on the banned list.
Well, your new establishment may result in.
Oh, look, that's
pie in
the sky right now at this moment in time.
No, I know, it's good. Listen, I love the free thinking ambition,
you
know.
Forward.
Is this pre seniors tour or after seniors tour?
Oh, I would hope to be pre.
Where is Nathan Murphy on the spectrum of golf pervs?
Oh.
How seriously do you take it when you go to the range?
Like, I just
go to the range for a chat.
He just goes for a chat, yeah. Because his kids are down in tennis, so he just comes up for a coffee and a chat.
And do you hit any balls?
No point, like.
He's too good.
I'm always fearful that I'm going to ruin that thing I had last time.
What was that, sorry?
I'm not sure what it is, but it's just a natural talent.
You played well the last time?
Yes. Okay. So
you're not touching it.
What is the handicap, Nathan?
18.
Okay.
But like, I've played four times all year. Turns out having a one-year-old child is not beneficial to my golf game.
Mm. It's what's putting me off having children.
And the fact you're a golf perv, which is going to go against you for...
Well... I mean, he's basically labelled all of his regular customers in the same bracket, I would think.
Make us feel good here. On average per day, how many Golf Weekly listeners are you getting through the doors?
There's not a day that goes by that somebody doesn't say, friend of the pod.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a great little community. It genuinely
but
is. Genuinely.
They give out quite a lot.
Go on.
About what?
About our...
lack of pods.
Regular weekly. Well,
here we are. Here we are. And we're going to kick on.
Why don't you give them a discount is all I'd say.
Yeah.
Might be a nice, generous thing to do.
Why don't you give a friend of the pod discount?
I can do.
Oof.
Careful now. You don't want to say something you'll regret.
No, I don't.
Listen, we've done enough free plugs for this week.
Okay.
Next week.
You're right.
We're moving on. There weren't many tweets this week because all of the tweets were just people entering the competition.
No, there could have been loads of tweets. There was just so many tweets entering the competition that I had no interest in looking at other tweets.
So we'll press on. Let's deal with last week before we talk Alfred Dunhill. Because I do want to get your thoughts on the Dunhill. Mm-hmm. It's such an interesting event and brilliant golf courses and lots of celebs as well. But Danny Willett we should deal with, who won at Wentworth just ahead of John Rahm. It is extraordinary what's happened, Willett. You might have the inside track here, really. So he was 462nd in the world 16 months ago. And he said on Sunday after the win at Wentworth, there were some dark places. We were in a bit of turmoil. We reworked everything. It's extra special when you're then able to produce special things. This week has been one of those fairy tales to win on home soil as well. And a few people, Ewan Murray in The Guardian, for instance, pointed out a certain happy symmetry here in that this was the first event that starts qualifying process for the Ryder Cup. And actually, you go back to Hazeltine in 2016, and this is where it seemed to start to go wrong for Willett. He was in the world's top 10 at that stage, having won the Masters 5 months earlier. His brother writes the blog. Whether that's connected to him having a terrible Ryder Cup debut or not, it's hard to know, but, you know, two and two
certainly
sometimes.
Didn't help.
Yeah, sometimes.
Well, he was hung out to dry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Darren Clarke did him no favours, really.
No.
They should have buried the thing instead of, you know... Did he come out and have to apologise?
Yes.
Yeah, where Clarke should have just laughed it off and gone, ah.
No big deal.
No.
So from that point on, things went catastrophically bad. And last year, 462nd in the world. He won in Dubai towards the end of last year. And he's now up in the world's top 50, excuse me. Possibly as high as 31st, 32nd. So what went wrong with Willett? And now do we know what he's put right? Is it possible to tell from just watching his swings?
Right, I give you Danny. When he came out on tour originally, he was exceptionally talented. but he was exceptionally naturally talented. He didn't swing the club exceptionally well. He had a very, very, very early wrist cock, but the way he played was superb. And he was, I wouldn't put him in the category of Rory McIlroy, but he, you know, when somebody comes out, you'll know straight away whether they're going to make it or not, or you certainly get that impression. And you would have definitely got the impression that he was going to make it. And he did make it. But on his way up to the very, very top, he started working with different coaches. And he got a little bit too technical. And I think when natural players become technical, it's a recipe for disaster. And I think once they lose their confidence that they have, that their natural ability gets them there, they really, really struggle then with technique. And I think that's what happened to him. He got to a point where he was more technique orientated than natural orientated. And, you know, it was a very, very slippery slope then he was on. And, you know, it just, you saw it in his results, you saw it on his demeanour on the golf course. He got very frustrated, he got very tense, he got very wound up about it. And then all of a sudden, he kind of hit the reset button, as they say, and I think he went back to his old coach, did he? I think so now, I'm not 100% on this one. Mm. And he just went back to being Danny Willett again.
Because he won the Masters with the early wrist hinge.
Yes.
Did someone then, do we know, get in his head and say, look, if you really want to be top player, yeah, you need to lose the early wrist hinge. Did that happen to him, do we know? Or did he think himself, looking at it, I need to change this?
I think like anything, when you have that success, success breeds success and you want more. And maybe he just, by searching for something else, I certainly know he went down the wrong road. Mm.
And would your advice have been to him then in 2016, if anyone comes near you and tells you to get rid of that wrist hinge, even though on paper you would never teach to a beginner, you just run a million miles away from that person? Would that be the advice?
Well, Jim Furyk, that's all you have to quote.
Yeah.
You know, straight away is, you know, Jim Furyk never went technical and he was able to keep the same standard up for many, many years.
And how much of a demand on like his timing and coordination and talent was the early wrist hinge putting?
It was a huge amount, to be honest with you.
Okay. So me and Nathan wouldn't be able to pull that off, really.
I wouldn't have been able to pull it off, you know. But that's just natural ability, and that's what he was used to. Mm. But he used to play beautiful golf. He really did. I wasn't surprised that he won the Masters, because he had the talent.
And mentally, when he was coming on to tour, could you see he had it?
Oh yeah, he had the Ian Poulters, very much so. He thought that he was definitely going to make it. He wasn't shy in any way.
It's probably toughened him in a way that his Masters win is really the Jordan Spieth collapse year. You know, that's how it's referred to. But you have to be there. You have to play well. You still have to beat everybody else. We just watched him hit a shot there because the Dunhill is on in front of us on the TV.
Okay.
To my eye, there's far less wrist hinge than there was 2-3 years ago. Yeah. So where's his swing now over the last couple of years?
I think he's probably working it a little bit back in.
The wrist hinge?
You know, the wrist hinge. But he'd gotten away from it completely and he was hitting it all over the shop.
Was he?
Yeah.
And when you're saying, so he gets to a level and he's around the world's top 10 after winning the Masters and people are telling him he needs to lose that wrist hinge if he wants to be a truly elite player. Who are those people around him? Is that unsolicited advice when he's on the range and... Or is that his coach at the time? Or is that himself wondering, is there another part of...
Probably a little bit of both. He probably initiated it himself, right? Probably sought advice, going, right, what can I do here? You know, how do I get better? Or how do I continue down the road that I'm in? Mm. And it turned bad for him, really.
It's an amazing thing, really, the number of players who've got to the summit and then decided, well, now I need to do something to get better. As opposed to just saying to themselves, well, if I can maintain this for 10 years, I'll be there, thereabouts in lots of competitions. If I've been good enough to win a major, maybe I'll just pretty much keep things as they are. You know, Tiger did it, it worked out okay, but like whatever Tiger did, it was going to work out okay. Mm. Mm. Harrington kept playing around. Now, he argued that's how he got to that point, so playing around was his normal. There's a perverse logic there.
Yeah, there is, yeah. Yeah, there's different people. But it's also characters, you know, what type of character you are. Like, you see it so many times. Like, Danny, lovely fellow. And then as his career went on a trajectory upwards, he wasn't such a nice guy. And then he got to the very top.
That's your experience of him. I just want to be fair to him.
Well, absolutely, yeah. Well, I can give you loads of people who'll give you the similar story. But
I'm just conscious he's not here to defend himself.
Okay.
So I take your point.
Right.
That mightn't be everyone's experience of Danny Willett, we should
exactly.
say.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. And then when they lose it, they want to be everybody's friend. And by the time they come back down the ladder, then they actually can get back to themselves and back playing decent golf. Mm-hmm. But they really have to, you know, take that kind of nosedive for a while. Because I'll tell you, it's a story on behalf of myself. We played in Qatar one of the years, can't remember which year, but it was Danny was going well, actually. And he had this box in the players' lounge. And he was doing a charity skydive with his wife. And normally in a box like that, you'd make sure it was covered and any money that goes into it, you know, nobody can see it. But anyway, there was nothing in it. I think there was a tea in it at the time. And there was talk that breakfast time in Thursday morning, breakfast, that the thing was empty. And he probably wasn't that well liked around the table at the time. So, of course, I was eating my breakfast, and morning time probably wasn't my best time. And I was listening to this, so I just went, I banged the table like that, and I said, I tell you what, lads, I give him a grand if he jumps without the parachute. Right? Which, of course, got an absolute, you know, rupture of laughter. But it didn't quite help that one of the lads actually told him that I would. So myself and Danny didn't quite talk for about 2 months, but after that we got on grand.
So. When is your time of the day?
Now, right now, right now.
This is peak cheery, yeah. Peter.
This is peak cheery, 2:30.
It's one of the most remarkable things of golf, the amount of players who try and redo their swing. And like Tiger's probably responsible for a lot of that, which makes it even worse, because when Tiger did it first after 97, it wasn't a quick fix. It was... Yeah.
2 years, 3 years.
Two, 3 years. Yeah. So the greatest player of all time, the most obsessive player of all time,
yeah.
It took him 2 to 3 years. Now, I know it was a complete reworking of his swing, but even still.
I think I heard Michael Clayton recently, the architect who I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, making the argument that the greatest case of unfulfilled potential in the game of golf is Tiger Woods' career because of all the swing changes.
Mm. That if he'd just gone with the flow...
He would have won 30 majors.
I think he'd stuck with Butch.
Could have easily. Mm. So look, that's Willett's win. He looks to be back now. Did you ever reboot your swing in a dramatic way?
I tried a physical fitness for a while in relation to gym work and whatever else.
Stop drinking Coca-Cola?
No. Well, I did that, yeah, and that was...
The end.
Headline news at the time.
Well, it's your own fault.
Yeah, which was my own fault.
I had a Coke addiction. I mean, come on. Yeah.
That was a good one, actually.
It was great. Still one of the highlights of my entire broadcasting career was sitting across from Peter Lowry and he goes, I was addicted to Coke. sorry, what? Yeah, never had the man been so delighted with himself.
I think you rehearsed that on the way in a few times.
I wanted to get radar with it, but it never happened.
So whatever about the physical side of things, did you ever change, I'm going to change my takeaway, I'm going to change my grip, I'm going to reboot the whole thing?
No, I never. I didn't feel like I needed to at the time, you know what I mean? Everything was working halfway decent, but I knew what I did was, you know, probably had to get everything a little bit better, but I didn't think I needed to rework anything. Mm. But everything could have improved by a certain percentage.
Yeah. So that's the Wentworth done and dusted, competition done and dusted. McIlroy finished ninth.
And as we predicted last week, I think.
Yeah. This time last week, he was on course to a 76, just shot a 76 and finishes ninth. So look, he's rocked up with Dad Jerry at the Dunhill. Already I've seen Ruud Hullett Jamie Redknapp, AP McCoy, Ronan Keating there. Justin Timberlake is big on the circuit now.
Playing with Justin Rose.
Is he, yeah? Bill Murray naturally is there, even though he's hurt his hand. He's a kind of one hand at the moment.
Yeah, but there's no greater indictment of golf than watching Bill Murray play at these pro-ams. Bill Murray, who was very much a hero growing up and, you know, one of the funniest men alive, spends his time playing in golf pro-ams and is now the dullest man that the world has ever seen.
I think that's a bit harsh on Bill. Is he dull?
Oh, he is now. Like, his sense of humour. There's no way of having a good
Bill
sense
here,
of humour
by the way.
On a golf course.
I've seen Steve Redgrave hold a very nice putt.
Well, this putt isn't... It's this event that holds the world record for the longest putt ever held on television.
Correct. Michael Phelps.
Michael Phelps.
Terry Wogan back in the day. Hold a monster. Mm. Have you ever seen the one where Jack Nicklaus goes to show Johnny Miller?
Oh.
Yes.
That's a
yes.
beauty. Yeah. Where Miller's like, what am I supposed to do with this?
Yeah.
And here. Nicklaus goes, just put it. And you put it. Walks over, drops the ball, whack in.
Thanks very much.
That's a beauty.
Yeah.
Who did you play with?
Yeah.
I played with, my very first year, I played with Eddie Jordan's wife, Marie.
Where was Eddie?
Eddie didn't want to play.
He wouldn't have time for golf.
No, but his wife was very good. Marie was a very good player. She played off nine.
A very good player?
Very good player.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting, Peter. Interesting. Yeah. That says a lot about you right now, what's just happened there.
Thanks very much. Yeah.
Do you have to get... So for the Dunhill Links... How does it work in terms of who you play with? Do you have to get to a certain level of ranking or fame that you can just go, I'm playing with whoever the hell I want? So, or do you sometimes have to suck it up and you're just throwing with whoever?
A bit of both. I played with my brother for 3 years.
Okay.
Oh, nice.
So you obviously, I got him in for 3 years.
And how hard did you have to push that?
Quite difficult.
Right.
Yeah.
But Rory getting Jerry on. Whatever you want, Rory.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah. A lot of the Americans would be like that, coming over. They'd play with their buddies and stuff.
Amazing.
D.A. Points is playing with Bill Murray.
One together at Pebble.
Didn't Brooks bring Ricky? They played, I think, last year or the year prior.
Or he plays with... Does he play with Chase?
His brother Chase?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, Chase is a pro now.
Mm.
So but I think he did bring him.
Maybe the first year, yeah. But no, I had 3 great years with the brother.
What's he play off?
5.
Oh, proper golfer.
Yeah, proper golfer. Maybe 6. And then I played with Kieran McManus. We won it, actually, 1 year.
Is that JP McManus' son?
What do you get as the pro for winning the team event?
If I said a handful of dollars, $50,000.
Was that at the generosity of the McManus family or
the prize? No, that was the prize.
So would McManus, your partner, would get 50 grand as well?
No, he got a trophy.
He didn't need it, in fairness.
The amateur can't get money.
Correct, yeah.
Can he turn pro the day before? No. Oh, then he can't play as your amateur.
Exactly. Yeah.
Cruel. Yeah. So you make off with 50k.
50k.
Really, lads are scumbikes.
Yeah, I know.
Really, I mean, it's just
Where
disgusting.
Had you finished in the actual tournament?
I'd missed a cut. I have to admit, Kieran played super. I missed a cut by a shot. Cut was 4 under. I was 3 under. We played St Andrews in the final round. And we played it backwards. We played started from 10, and we were going okay, nicely. And I birdied, I think 17. He birdied 18 with a shot. I birdied the first. I hole my second shot on the second. I birdied the third. He birdied the fifth with a shot. Mm. We went from, just making the cut to winning.
Are they off the same tees as you? No.
No. They play quite a bit forward.
How do they go around St Andrews? That's the one I'm most interested in.
St Andrews is a nightmare, an absolute nightmare with playing in the Dunhill. It's because it takes so long. You're 6 hours because there's so many people on the golf course and the amateurs are forward tees. So there's a lot of crisscrossing. And you can imagine there's a few balls crisscrossing as well.
Yes. But in terms of difficulty, because I look at St Andrews, I'm obsessed with St Andrews, I just have to play there at some stage. But I do look at it and I think, I'm sure there are subtleties and I'm sure you have to be on certain sides of fairways. But I look at it and think, it doesn't look too bad though.
St Andrews for amateurs is one of the easier golf courses you'll play.
Yeah, looks that way.
Because the golf course is, there's out of bounds right and there's out of bounds left, but there's a whole big golf course in the middle. And there's fairways in the middle. So all you have to do on the way out is hit it left,
and the way home, hit it left, and you're fine.
Mm.
So if you've got the hooks, it's the place to be.
Okay.
$50,000.
Yeah.
And you didn't even play well.
I did play well.
You missed the cut.
That doesn't mean I didn't play well.
So considering ye had that success together.
Yes.
A great success. You won the Alfred Dunhill, like as an amateur winning the Alfred Dunhill.
Yes.
I presume you could just drop him a text at any time. He's forever in your debt. And you just go, the lads want to be out in the Dare Manor at 2 o'clock tomorrow. Boom.
Well, I think your honour would look after us in some shape or form.
Yeah? Great. Everyone wins. Fantastic.
Tell me a bit more about St Andrews and playing it and why it's so good.
It's like walking into a history museum when you get in there. Especially the first tee and the 18th.
Yeah, amazing.
It's just absolutely, you know, you just close your eyes and think of all the stuff that you've watched on TV and then think of all the stuff you haven't seen on the television. You know how, where it started from.
I was there the
it's
year...
just incredible.
The year Paul Dunne won very well. Mm. And ultimately, Zach Johnson won. They had that playoff. Remember,
Speed that was going for
the Grand Slam.
Yeah.
And I do remember standing looking at, you know, just this square field of the first fairway and the 18th green, and that you've got the clubhouse and you've got the hotel. What's the name of the hotel by the 18th fairway?
Russell.
Yeah, something like that.
Russell
anyway. And just thinking, it was like one of the most beautiful pictures, like sunsetting, gorgeous evening time. Most people are gone. And you know the history of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just thinking, this is just the most...
Oh, it's
epic thing. It's
Mecca for anybody who plays golf. Just to go there and even walk the golf course. You can walk it on a Sunday. I think the golf course would close on a Sunday. Spectacular.
Mm.
What's the locker room like?
You never get into the clubhouse on the back of the first, because it's for members who are of the Royal and Ancient. So the RNA are, but the clubhouse down, it's nice, but it's functional.
Okay.
You know what I mean? There's nothing museum like in the new clubhouse, as they call it.
Mm.
But they play three great golf courses for the Dunhill. They play Kings Barnes and Carnoustie. Now they have tried to get Carnoustie off the roster
because it's too tough.
Well, it's just too far away,
okay.
And the amateurs don't like going there. Really, because the only time they ever go there is to play one round around it. They don't go and play a practice round, while the pros really have to play three practice rounds.
Yeah, and is St Andrews approaching, I guess, especially on a day where the wind doesn't blow? But I know that's true of most links courses. But even, you know, kind of a standard 15-mile-an-hour wind, maybe. Is it approaching the point for pros with modern equipment and ball where it's obsolete, where it's too easy? Like where
it is, yes. Yeah. Very much so. Like they've tried to extend a couple of holes. I think they've made a Hames of 17. You hit from another field, which is out of bounds. And then the galleries can't get around, so they have to move them around. I don't like it, to be honest with you. It moves away from what it should be.
Mm.
But that's just equipment, you know, and you regularly see 60, 61, 62, 63s around St Andrews now.
You'd wonder, is the turning point, maybe there is never going to be a turning point, but the Open Championship a couple of years' time, 2021 is in St Andrews, isn't it? Somebody goes around and shoots 59.
Yes.
And maybe people finally go, this isn't right.
That'd be terrible. Well, I mean, if the solution then isn't we have to change equipment, or if they just say, well, they can't ever say we're not using St Andrews anymore.
No, but that, is that the turning point for almost equipment of people maybe having a serious conversation about it?
Yeah.
To be honest with you, I think things have to change. Like, probably the best way to do it is, it's a bit like Formula One, where everybody has to have a certain standard equipment.
Mm.
You can tweak it some way that suits you, but... it has to be a ball that is pretty much the exact, everybody's using the exact same ball and everybody's using the same clubs or equipment.
What's the turf like at St Andrews? What are the greens like?
Greens, you wouldn't be that impressed with, because they've got that real coarse grass on them and the ball bobbles a lot.
Right.
Well, there must be such traffic on the greens as well. Not just
traffic.
For
those
3 days,
people.
But all year round.
So they wouldn't be the quickest and they wouldn't be the smoothest. But they're exceptionally undulating. And they can put the flags in really, really difficult places to get to if you're not on the proper side of the fairway. Like the amount of mound that's in the greens is incredible.
Because I always think that's a good sign of a golf course whereby me and Nathan are just looking at the fairway and saying, well, I can kind of hit that fairway. Mm. It's pretty easy. Whereas the pros on the same tee box are saying, man, I've only got a small enough area on that fairway where I need to be to have a shot at birdie or something here.
Yeah.
That's when it's working really well for both. Does Andrews have a bit of that?
Oh, very much so.
Yeah.
There's a couple of them where there is no fairway to hit nearly. You know, you either go for the green or you lay it with a 6-iron or something like that, and then you're left with another 4-iron into the green. Mm. There's a couple of holes that if you take driver out of people's hands, they play quite difficult. But again, it all depends on the wind. Like we're looking, you're just looking at it there on the TV, and there's very little wind. And if you play links golf courses, as you said, with little or no breeze,
sure,
it's easy peasy.
Is 18, was the prevailing wind behind you at 18 or against you?
Anytime we played St Andrews, it was always off the right.
Off your shoulder.
Off your shoulder.
So would you drive the green?
You'd get close enough to it. I've never hit it on the green. But you'd get kind of up that left-hand side where you're kind of chipping up the green.
Yeah, and the first is, you don't take driver off the first?
No, you can't because you'd run into the burn, which I've watched. Didn't Ross Fisher in the playoff hit it in the burn off the first tee?
No.
Like real.
Did Harrington hit it in the burn? Somebody in 2015.
I think it was Ross Fisher in the playoff.
Harrington went in a bush.
Off the first... I was a Tiger in 2015.
Was it?
Somebody off the first tee in the first round went straight in there.
Mm. Wow.
It's noticeable the first round here. It's anyone who's played St Andrews who's on the leaderboard, basically, all in the top 10 bar three players.
Yeah.
So we've had a 63 at St Andrews, a 64 at St Andrews, plenty of 66s as well. So that just shows where it is, I suppose, when the wind isn't blowing. If you played St Andrews today, you're on the leaderboard.
But it's, look...
Still respected by the pros, though?
Of course it is, yeah.
You're not walking around going, God, this is a waste.
You don't want to have to shoot around St Andrews. You know, a really low score. You want to be able to build your score in St Andrews. Mm. But if you go out with the thing that I need to shoot 65 around St Andrews, it plays quite difficult.
Do they put the pins in easy positions to keep the amateurs moving this week?
Because they have to have the same pin placements for 3 days... Mm. They have to put them in reasonably, you know, accessible positions.
Yeah.
Because they can't manage 3 days of weather forecasting, so they have to put them in.
Do pros like this event? I mean, I get that Justin Rose likes playing with Justin Timberlake. I get that Rory likes playing with his dad. Mm. But does your average pro, who's trying to make a few quid, this is a big week for him, and he's stuck with some boring oil magnate son, do they like this week with the 6-hour
end? I think depending on what situation you're in. If you've just described that, you know, you're fighting to keep your card, and you get drawn with somebody who's kind of taken it overly serious on their behalf, then it's quite difficult, because you can get one or two amateurs who want to finish out on every hole because they're here to, you know, play. It might be their first time.
They want a scorecard.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if you get guys who have played us before, we get out of the way really quickly.
Okay.
You know? Like...
That's fair. If you're playing St Andrews, and on the first, you put it in the burn, you're not picking your ball up.
I'm not picking up.
Well, you should do.
No chance. Really.
You know, I know you look shocking hard, but it's shocking hard.
Sorry, I'm playing St Andrews.
If I'm playing St Andrews, and I'm not playing this every year, I want to see what I'm shooting.
Okay.
I'm entitled to be there. Change the rules of the competition. Screw you, Peter.
Yeah, well, no, it's not me. It's Johan Rupert. And trust me, you don't want to get on the wrong side of Johan Rupert.
That's right. I am hitting 5 off the tee, everyone. Yeah. Now back off.
I played probably the most famous person I played in the group with was Samuel L. Jackson.
Now we're talking. How far are we into this podcast to bring this up?
Yeah.
He's really cool, isn't he?
Yeah. Is he? Man, he's so cool. Yeah.
He's really cool.
Can you get over how cool he is?
He's very cool.
Tiger and Phil's conversation.
This was their conversation.
Oh, yeah,
Samuel L. Jackson's cool.
Yeah.
He's really cool. Oh, God, it's hard to be a cool dad when
when he's around.
Chris Evans was in the... he played with Nick Doherty.
Interesting. What's Chris Evans like?
Nice guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Full of beans. Like, real lively character.
Yeah. Energy.
But he got thrown out playing off a funny handicap. They won it, and he was told he'd never be back and has never been invited back.
You're kidding.
Yeah, that was a big story. Yeah. Was that two, 3 years ago?
Wow.
And the other guy in the group was...
Samuel L. Jackson, you never even explained that.
Yeah, he was talkative.
He was cool.
Really cool.
He looked like a guy who struggled around the golf course, though.
In what way?
He struggled like he was... You know the way you see Tiger Woods, right? And after he's played a tournament, the next day you see him and he's struggling to walk, really. That's the way Samuel L. Jackson carries on.
Okay. He's a decent golfer, though, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah, mad keen too, mad keen.
Is he a golf perv?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Sorry, there's the headline for the pod. Samuel L. Jackson is a golf perv. What are you?
I used to be a golf perv.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Who was the third person in the group?
What's his name? He was in Ocean's 11 as the...
Brad Pitt.
No. The guy who ran the casino.
Andy Garcia?
Yes.
He plays a good bit of golf.
Yeah, Andy Garcia.
Do the amateurs have to be told sometimes, here, mate, frankly, you have no right to be losing your temper like that. You're not good enough to lose your temper like that. Calm it down.
No, you wouldn't see an amateur lose the temper.
They're pretty good about it.
Yeah, they are. The only time you'd see them, you know, you'd have to say to them is, you know, you've hit enough there or pick it up or whatever.
Ouch.
Did you tell Samuel L. Jackson to pick the ball up?
No.
How many is enough? Like, it's like Stableford kind of rules.
It's Stableford. So it's best one score at each hole. So what they try and do is let the pro finish out. And if they can beat the pro, then they finish. They play until they can beat the pro.
Not a fan of this format at all.
Like, if I'm playing Carnoustie in St. Andrews, I'm not getting the putting half the holes.
Look, lads, this is the thing, you know what I mean? Your six-hour rounds, you're out there to enjoy it.
So you actually want your pro to stink the joint out so that you can play all the holes?
Well, you might, but...
Well, it sounds like McManus got to play all the holes.
He certainly did. And trust me, I was on his back the whole way. All I could see was the 50 bags of sand.
Are you allowed to read the putts?
Yes. And I did.
Did you?
Yeah.
And then you're allowed to pick the clubs and say, no, six are 100%. Oh, that stuff's
going
on.
Yeah, yeah. Now, everybody has a caddy.
Sure.
But some of the caddies there now would be... they'd be average enough. You know, so you might be saying, they might be telling their pro or their amateur to hit six iron when you know they've no chance of reaching the green with six iron, and you say, right, hold it. Or they give them the driver off the tee. That's the worst thing of all. Every hole is like they hand the amateur the driver, and you think, what are you doing? Just chip it down the fairway.
So is your trophy for winning the Dunhill Links, is that beside your Spanish Open trophy?
I didn't get a trophy.
So you don't?
You just got 50 G's.
Yeah.
Yeah, there probably was a trophy. I couldn't care less. I'm out of here. Job done.
Yeah, I'm done, yeah.
Oh, dear. Yeah. So there we are. That is Dunhill. Any other final thoughts on the week that's going on there?
No, golf is quiet, isn't it? Or it feels quiet.
A little bit. Just to mention, over in Napa, California, they are taking part in the Safeway Open. Good field for this. Sorry, I'm not going to scoff at this one. We have Justin Thomas, Patrick Cantlay, Adam Scott, Matsuyama, DeChambeau. They're your top five in the betting. That's okay. Snedeker's there, Francesco Molinari, Mark Leishman, Phil Mickelson at 50-1. Phil Mickelson.
Did you see the Twitter ad about the skins match?
Yeah, the WhatsApp group.
The WhatsApp group. That was it.
You see, we laughed at it. But then Rory tweeted that this is exactly how a conversation would go if we were talking about this.
It's a shocker.
So maybe we just don't understand.
Give us a lift.
It's worth watching if you want to watch it, I suppose.
Who's Aurora there that's leading the amateurs now alongside Russell Knox?
No idea.
Don't know. Phil Mickelson has turned up. He was playing with Steph Curry in the Pro-Am. The weight loss program he started at the Open in July is nearing completion. He is now back to the top end of what he weighed when he was at Arizona State in the early 90s. He has lost just over 2 stone, 30 pounds, at the age of 50, give or take. He's a year short. It's hard to lose that kind of weight at that age.
Yeah.
Is the man eating? I don't know what he's doing. Every time we see him, he's got that big thing of coffee for his arthritis in his hands. Actually, I saw his Larry David fireside chats. It looked to me like his hands were very swollen. Feels. that the arthritis was.
Right.
But I could have been projecting, you never know. So he was talking about the last year of his career. It seems like he's really motivated here, Phil, you know? So he won at Pebble Beach last year. Since then, in his 16 events after Pebble, he's had one top 35 finish. Said, the worst 6 months of my career, but I'm determined to fix it. I wasn't mentally sharp or focused the last 5 or 6 months. It led to some very poor play. I'm taking a bit of a different approach this time. I'm not going to put as many hours in. I'm going to try to be more focused when I do put time in and enjoy it a bit more, see if that turns it around. And he's going to make a real go of it. Like, he's no intentions of going seniors tour and trying to hoover up some majors there. This is, by the way, with the Ryder Cup qualification process starting. This would be him, if he doesn't get in, missing a first Ryder Cup since 1993.
Wow.
That's insane.
But, like, how could you be in the right frame of mind if you've lost that much weight and drinking that amount of coffee? Like, surely you're on the golf course.
He wasn't in the right frame of mind pre that.
I think the weight loss is him.
That is him showing, I have a renewed level of focus.
Wow.
I keep saying the word reboot ever since your interview with Michael Owen.
Why did I say reboot?
No, the book's called Reboot. Name of the book.
I never realised it was such a good advertisement.
Phil's rebooting things. No, the weight loss, I think, is part of him saying, right, Phil, got to get serious here. Winged Foot, the US Open is out next, isn't it? Mm. He went well there before.
Don't remember.
Yeah.
A year away from the start of the Ryder Cup?
Yeah, to the day.
Mm.
Can Phil Mickelson turn it around at his age? What do you think?
I don't like the weight loss thing.
Do you not?
No. It happened to... the person that springs to mind the most is Darren Clark.
But Phil was at this weight originally. Like, he hasn't gone to a weight he never played at. He's just lost 2 stone. It's not... He's lost the pudge.
2 stone at 50, though.
He's lost the pudge.
Yeah, but I think you need that pudge when you're that age.
Do you?
Yeah.
I don't.
Warmth.
He looks strong.
Right.
Have you seen him? That picture of him at the beach?
Yeah.
It wasn't like a frail 50-year-old body.
No. Norman had the same thing and he just disappeared.
Greg Norman? Lost weight?
No, he was...
He was ripped.
He was ripped.
Still is.
Yeah.
They were putting up pictures of Norman naked next to Koepka naked. And Norman won hands down.
It's the golf perv now.
Actually.
Sorry, I proved my case. There it is. It's over.
You haven't proved anything.
End of podcast.
That would just make me a perv.
Okay.
It is. And Norman is in... unbelievable shape.
Oh, sensational.
So
we all saw them. We just didn't want to talk about them publicly.
Yeah. Here, I don't know. I have no problem with the weight loss. I think it speaks of a newfound focus.
Okay. We'll wait and see.
Mm.
Well, considering how much of a mess he was at the Ryder Cup last year.
Yeah. Yeah.
He won't want that to be his legacy.
No. So he's playing in
plus, Napa. Is he a good Ryder Cup person to have over the last couple of years?
Interesting.
You know, is he good for the team?
You're talking Tom Watson, etc.
Yeah, you know,
a little bit keen to see how often he's playing as opposed to how the team's doing, kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, is he that team person that he portrays to be?
Should he have been on the team last year, considering how poorly his game was?
Was he a pick?
But there again, look at the ladies. The Solheim Cup should have Suzanne Patterson been on it.
Yes.
And, okay, but if she had missed the putt...
Well, she didn't.
I know she didn't.
But she didn't.
I said, if she did.
But she didn't.
I know.
So you're still trying to say she shouldn't have been a pick,
I'm not saying she shouldn't have been a pick. I'm just making the point that there was somebody who hadn't played any golf, got picked and performed. And we look at Phil, who did get picked and played brutal.
Yeah,
and caused Argy Bargy and all the rest. So.
Lost his game. Well, to be fair, I don't think he caused Argy Bargy in Paris.
Right.
But certainly the Tom Watson era.
But was he not a bit... was there not an article about why he wasn't playing one of the days or why he was left out and he shouldn't have been left out?
Okay.
He wasn't too happy about it.
Hey, look, you need people who want to play in her. Let me add it.
Yeah, but I think if you're in a team event, you should be go team.
I take it you would have loved to get to a Ryder Cup. Was it something that you were...
Yeah, I would have loved it. Yeah. Even that Seve Trophy would have been great. Mm. I'd play my daughter on that one.
Well, you would have been in.
Yeah, I would have played in it.
Where, at the Heritage?
What age is Elizabeth now? 10. The other two were at home. She was being born.
I stayed at home, missed the German one, which was top 60 played in it, and I was top 60 at the time. All I had to do was turn up, get my money, and I was on the team.
Oh, it's not Elizabeth's fault, I think, Peter.
Absolutely. But anyway, I didn't turn up. I was a good dad. Stayed at home, mind the other two, and didn't make the team.
Dear God.
C'est la vie.
Ouch.
Well, c'est la vie, but yeah.
I'm sure they thank you for it every day.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, look, we're pretty much done. We'll keep an eye on the Dunhill. We are here with thanks to Lucala, Spain's largest golf resort, Irish-owned by FBD Hotels and Resorts in Mijas. Three different courses, UEFA standard training pitches as well. We'll have to get out there and try and play sometime.
Hey, Joe. The good people of Ballyhonus have been in touch.
Oh, my God.
Do you know who's a member of Ballyhonus Golf Club?
You.
Go on.
As of half an hour ago.
I'm not a member
of
Ballyhonus.
Half an hour ago.
I was doing this as a good thing for the good people of Ballyhonus.
That will be taxable, and I will highlight it to the revenue.
Very cost-effective rates down in Ballyhonus because it's a nine-hole course in a, get on
with it. Get on with it.
Emmett Kane is a member of Ballyhonus Golf Club.
Worse
and he's invited us down to do the pod, Joe.
Gets worse by the minute, Emmett.
Curly's Bar in Ballyhonus.
I've played Lucala, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I was down there many, many years ago. As a training when I was in UCD. Went down there, played. Stayed in Sunset Beach Hotel, which was owned by FBD at the time. Mm-hmm. So that was my training ground.
Yeah. Well, if we meet Mr. Emmett Keane, then we might get down there to Ballyhonus. Is it?
There's no FBD hotels in Ballyhonus.
Ballyhonus is that? It's not Lynx or anything, is it? I'm not too sure where Ballyhonus is. I don't know where it is. Never been to Ballyhonus.
I thought you were from Mayo. You certainly claim to be every September when they get to an All-Ireland final. And you don't know where Ballyhonus is?
Not really. You can have spent a lot of time at Mayo where they haven't been to every town.
Yes.
Come on. Do you know where Ballyhonus is?
I do.
Well, he's been there.
No, I don't.
Who has?
Peter just said you played there, no?
No.
Lucala!
Lucala. I mistook up that whole conversation.
He went to Ballyhonus.
He wasn't actually listening.
He wasn't listening. His golf training.
It's zoned out.
It's on East Mayo. It's on the border of Roscommon and Galway.
Yeah,
no, I was never.
So it's not a Lynx course, not near the sea at all.
Very good. Well, listen.
But a beautiful nine-hole party.
Yeah, you've mentioned it. We're done. That shameful spectacle is being brought.
I'm giving the listeners an opportunity to go and...
You are, yeah.
With a prize.
Good man. Okay, that's us done. We'll try and be back next week. Usual time, and we'll see you then. Good luck.
Starter kit right here.